This week on Making Contact.
How do people in that region view America? They hate America. All they've seen from us is the buzzing overhead of an ominous killing machine and the destruction of their communities.
It's a cleaner way to wage war. At least that's the way it's being sold. But unmanned military drones are wreaking havoc in Pakistan, Afghanistan, and elsewhere.
I can't walk properly and have constant pain in my arm. I wish I had died in the attacks as well.
On this edition, we bring you voices from Pakistan of families destroyed by drone strikes. And we hear from Medea Benjamin and other activists who are working to build a global movement against this controversial military technology. I'm Andrew Stelzer, and this is Making Contact, a program connecting people, vital ideas, and important information.
More broadly, Al-Qaeda's killing of innocents, mostly Muslim men, women, and children, has badly tarnished its image and appeal in the eyes of Muslims around the world.
Excuse me, will you speak out about the killing of innocents by the United States? What about the hundreds of innocent people we are killing with our drone strikes in Pakistan and in Yemen and Somalia? I speak out on behalf of those innocent victims. They deserve an apology from you, Mr. Brennan.
You're listening to the sound of Medea Benjamin, longtime anti-war activist and founder of Code Pink, being dragged out of a speech by U.S. counterterrorism advisor John Brennan in May of 2012. A couple of months after that incident, Benjamin came to Making Contact Studios and told us how she became interested in drones.
I was determined to get the story and went myself to Pakistan and Afghanistan right after 9/11. Because I didn't believe my government when they said we have these high precision weapons and we only get the bad guys. And I didn't even have to get into Afghanistan to find out that that was a big lie, because I saw the stream of refugees coming out of Afghanistan after the U.S. had launched all of these attacks.
Benjamin wrote about her travels in a book titled Drone Warfare: Killing by Remote Control.
And I talk in the book about the first girl I met in the streets of Peshawar was a 13-year-old girl named Roya, and she was begging on the streets. And when I found out that she was from Kabul, I asked if I could get her story, and we got a translator, and we sat down. She took us back to the mud hut that she lived in. And it was just horrifying to hear her tale, because she lived in Kabul on the outskirts of a Taliban compound, and her father was a laborer, a farmer, and her mother was at home one day with a couple of her sons and daughters when suddenly a drone attacked and a missile hit the wrong place and hit her house. And she had been out of the house with her father. When they came home, they found bits and pieces of the family on trees around the what had been their home. The mother had been vaporized. Two of the sons and one daughter had been killed as well. And she described how her father went and carefully collected the little bits and pieces of body parts that he could find, buried them, gave them a ceremony, prayed, and then never spoke again. And I met this man, and I'll never forget this man, because he was a beautiful, big, tall, 6 foot, strong guy with strong hands. You could just see the calluses from all the work in the fields. And there he sat on the edge of this bed made of straw and sat and looked into space. And this 13-year-old girl said, he doesn't speak. He hasn't worked a day since that happened. And after the family suffered that tragedy, this young girl, Roya, had to collect whatever goods they could find and take the father and the three remaining siblings and start walking through very treacherous territory and the Khyber Pass to get into Pakistan, where now they are trying to survive by begging in the streets of a very, very, very poor community. And that was the first time I had a chance to meet a victim of our drone attacks.
We do not have studies or school these days here in North Waziristan. I am in the 11th grade, but I can't study properly because I'm extremely afraid of drones. I can't sit and study for a long time, either indoors or outdoors. My fear makes me constantly change locations, so I can't concentrate. Young people don't enjoy their lives here in North Waziristan. Two or more young children can't sit together due to the fear, and they run away from gatherings. They sit under a tree, but after some time, they change places, and they can't sit in one place for a long time. Everybody's in extreme tension. We don't have electricity here in Waziristan, so the children sleep outside. But they are afraid of drones and can't sleep properly. Women also can't sleep because of the fear of drone attacks in the area. Our families can't sleep or live together. We sleep separately and far away from each other because everybody is afraid of drone attacks. We always get afraid when our family members gather. Sometimes we try to come together in a secure place during weddings, but we remain separate during funerals and avoid traveling together with family members due to the fear of drone attacks. We can't enjoy our weddings at all. The groom can't even sit with his bride in a room without fear. They're all afraid of drone attacks.
The use of drones goes back decades when they were first being developed for surveillance purposes, but it was really September 11th that you could say was the coming of age of the drones. When September 11th happened, there were perhaps about 50 drones in the whole Pentagon arsenal, and today there are many thousands, perhaps over 7,000, and who knows how many the CIA has because we're not privy to that information. But it was the invasions of Afghanistan and Iraq that really put the drones on the map. They were part of the shock and awe. They were part of the precision bombing that took out so many ministries in both countries. They were part of the attacks on the Taliban that led to the death of a lot of innocent people, but the American people didn't know about that because we were told we're in this new era of precise, clean weapons that are laser-guided or smart bombs. And so the American people didn't have to worry about things like civilian casualties. They kill a lot less people than carpet bombing did in the World Wars, and certainly the kind of bombing that was done in the days of Vietnam. But they are not the surgically precise weapons that they're touted as. And when they're in the hands of secret organizations like the CIA and the Joint Special Operations Command, also known as JSOC of the military, they actually expand the wars so that it was bad enough the U.S. has been involved in wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, but then really, unbeknownst to the American people, we have seen the wars going beyond that to spill over into Pakistan and then into Yemen, into Somalia. There have been some drone strikes in the Philippines. There's talk about using them in Nigeria. There's new drone bases that are now spreading around the world. And this is a very determined effort by our Pentagon and our government to have the latitude to continue waging war without some of the problems that have come with it in the past, like soldiers dying, American people complaining. And this is their way of saying, okay, it's war on the cheap, and it's war outside of the view of the public.
I can't even explain it. There was screaming and noise all around. Women and children started crying when they saw flesh and bones of the dead and injured people. There was blood, wounded people and dead bodies. I didn't know what to do. It was like a doomsday. It was early morning and I had guests in my guest room. It was early morning prayer time and I went home to bring water for ablution. Soon after, I heard a huge sound. I felt a gush of air push me. I rushed towards the guests when I heard the second blast. I didn't know what had happened. It was dark, and I could see smoke and dust coming out of my home. I fell unconscious after some time, and when I came to, found out that I was injured, as I still am today. I saw my mother, who was laying on the ground. She was severely injured. Some of my neighbors were also injured. My house was hit with 2 missiles from a drone. All of the guests died while they were doing their morning prayers. In total, 4 guests, 2 women and 2 children in my family died in the attack.
The only way we know these numbers is from what's been pieced together by organizations like the Bureau for Investigative Reporting in England that puts together some of the statistics. And they say that in Pakistan alone, there have been over 320 drone strikes, the overwhelming majority of them under the Obama administration, and that some 3,000 people have been killed, 175 of them children, and who knows about the rest of them. We are only able to name 170 people who've been killed, and many people in Pakistan would say that the vast majority of the rest of them who've been killed are either totally innocent people who had nothing to do with the fighting, or very low-level Taliban who were not out to get Americans, or Taliban sympathizers.
My brother was among those killed in drone attacks. Initially, we were all afraid, but now we are used to it. Many women would deliver their children prematurely. There are psychological effects of the drone attacks, too. For example, some people are afraid when they hear the creaking sounds of a door closing. They mistake it for a bomb blast or a drone attack. Women have also lost children prematurely due to the fear and loud sound. I know 5 or 6 such women. Drones are roaming around in the air, even right now. The drones are in the sky 24 hours a day, and we can hear the buzzing sounds of drones all day long. Can you hear it?
Through a piece of writing in the New York Times that came out on May 29th of 2012, we have discovered that President Obama is so intimately involved in this killing that he sits around on Terror Tuesdays with notes that resemble baseball cards and look through this list and decide who's going to live and who's going to die. And that they have made a determination beforehand that every military-age male in the strike area is going to be labeled a combatant, a militant. So automatically then, we hear in our news reports, oh, 20 militants died on Saturday and 12 militants died on Monday. And we can't believe those reports at all, because their definition of a militant is basically a militant looks like a guy with a beard who wears a turban and carries a gun and goes around with other guys with beards who wear turbans and carry guns. And that is the definition of just about every man in northern Pakistan. And so if the community is having a meeting about internal issues that is called a jirga, and they have gathered a lot of these men with beards and turbans and guns to this 18, 19-year-old pilot who is in the desert in Nevada, that looks very suspicious. And there have been occasions when they have bombed these jirgas and killed many, many of the tribal leaders at one time. And you can imagine the kind of repercussions that happens after that, because these are not just individuals who have been killed. These are people who are part of a clan, part of a tribe, part of an extended family. And many times, like in the case of these gatherings called jirgas, they are the leaders, the elders, the most respected members of the community.
That's about
It was 3 o'clock in the morning. 8 people died in the attack, and all of them were local people. We were all together in the Hujra, which is a traditional guest house for men. No one knows where the drone hit. We only witnessed the destruction. We found small pieces of the bodies after the attack. We gathered the pieces into a sack and buried them. There was a huge blast. I heard a roaring sound, and that was all. The drone hit a room, and nothing outside of the room got damaged, but the room collapsed. Americans do not differentiate between the bad and the good. They use drones and kill people, even if they are innocent. My guests were neither foreign militants, nor were they local Pakistani Taliban militants. So why would I expect a drone attack at my place? I believe both Pakistan and the USA are responsible, but none of the dead are enemies of the US or Pakistan. We do feel worried and afraid, but we are poor people. Where can we go from here? We can't afford to live anywhere else. It is up to the Americans if they want to leave us alive or if they want to kill us. It is all up to the Americans, as we can't move out from the area.
You're listening to Making Contact, a production of the National Radio Project. If you'd like more information or for CD copies of this program, please call 800-529-5736. Because of listeners like you, this show is distributed for free to radio stations in the U.S., Canada, and South Africa. To find out how to support us, download shows, or get our podcasts, go to radioproject.org. Like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Our handle is making_contact. We now return to hear more voices from Waziristan in Pakistan, along with excerpts of an interview with Medea Benjamin.
I can't walk properly and have constant pain in my arm since I was injured. I wish I had died in the attacks as well. I can't do business or socialize with people like I used to. I can't sleep properly or have any peace of mind. The incidents and scenes are always in my head. I curse the United States. May God curse the US because they don't differentiate between innocent and guilty. And they kill innocent people with drones. There might be good Americans. I pray for them to ask their government for justice.
The conscience of this nation is not coming from the White House. It's not coming from Congress. It's not coming anywhere from Washington. It's really coming from outlying areas in this country where people are beginning to stand up to these atrocities. And many people have discovered that the Air Force bases in their communities are where these drone pilots are being trained or the drones are being operated. And they have become outraged and decided to protest against it. And one group is a group that was protesting outside the Creech Air Force Base in Nevada. And it was on Good Friday. They crossed the line into the base. They asked the people on the base to have a meal with them. The folks on the base were not too interested in breaking bread with these Catholics, and many of them were from the Catholic worker community, and decided instead to have them arrested. They then used their trial in a very beautiful way to bring on these issues of international law, of the obligation to violate laws that are not just, and they brought in members of the international community who are known for their expertise in international law and turned the courtroom really into an educational session about drones, the violation of international law, the violation of our Constitution. And the example of that group in Creech was then replicated by a group in upstate New York in the Air Force Base called Hancock, where 35 of them did something similar. And that has inspired other groups then. And not only are they at Air Force bases, but they're also protesting at the headquarters of the drone manufacturers. They're doing die-ins in the offices of these drone manufacturers.
28 protesters were arrested this afternoon during a demonstration against Reaper drones.
Police stopped 150 protesters from walking from Route 11 to Syracuse Hancock Air National Guard Base.
The group against the use of drones by U.S. military in Afghanistan and the possible escalation of forces there.
General Atomics is the manufacturer of the Predator drone, dropping Hellfire missiles on innocent people in Pakistan and Afghanistan.
We have a tradition of opposing war making of any kind, heightened by our awareness of what's been done to the desert in the nuclear siege of probably close to 70 years now. And we saw this as an emerging, terrible new weapon of war.
Sister Megan Rice is a member of the Sisters of the Holy Child Jesus and one of 14 people arrested at Creech Air Force Base in 2009.
And so when we heard, and we could see these drones being flown, you could tell that nobody was in them when you passed the town of Mercury in Nevada. Very often we would see these drones flying up and down, landing, rising, and so forth. And then this article in the newspaper told us that they were actually operating in the Middle East, in Iraq, and then in Pakistan and Afghanistan. People were being snuffed out like flies from places like Creech Air Force Base, in front of a console or a computer with a joystick to release bombs that snuff out possible opponents to the United States. So by whatever means possible, I could not carry on my life without opposing that in whatever way I can, whether it's by physically being there or by trying to help other people know what's happening, because it's not being publicized as it really is happening.
There was an interesting poll that was taken by the polling group called Pew, and they polled 22 different nations, and they asked the question about the drone strikes. And it turned out that the United States and England were the only countries where the majority of people said it was cool to use the drones to kill people. And the rest of the countries, in differing degrees, said no. And when you looked at some countries like Egypt or Jordan, which is a U.S. ally, or Greece, a country in Europe, 9 out of 10 people in those countries said that voiced their opposition to the drone strikes. So the majority of people in the world think that this is a pretty barbaric, unfair, unjust, inhumane way of waging war. And in the international rules of warfare, and also the tenets of what's called the just war, these drone strikes are seen as barbaric, which is quite interesting, because if you ask an American what's a barbaric kind of warfare, they would say somebody taking a machete maybe and chopping off someone's head. And that certainly seems barbaric to me. But to the victims on the ground, this kind of hellfire missile that's coming out of the sky from nowhere and just obliterates people in an instant with no chance to surrender, no chance of proving their innocence, is seen as barbaric from the victim's point of view.
I have witnessed drone attacks in many places and on many occasions. People in the drone target areas are in bad conditions. Many survivors living in camps have skin problems like scabies, and they're all in pain and distress. I've seen many young children die after a drone attack because of their fear, and I've witnessed many women also miscarry numerous times due to fear. Some of the young children get psychologically depressed and they roam around the villages. They're mentally ill. They're itching all the time and they have diarrhea for months. Once, a drone hit a house and a boy's head fell 30 meters away, near a woman, who is now psychologically disturbed. We take the injured to the local doctors, but the doctors say they don't know how to treat such patients.
We are destabilizing a nuclear country, which is Pakistan. We're destabilizing a very populated country. We're destabilizing a country that already has ethnic differences. And we are unleashing perhaps some really terrible divisions like we did in the case of Iraq. And the traumatized people are now fleeing from the place they came for refuge in northern Pakistan. They're fleeing into the teeming cities like the city of Karachi and creating all kinds of new problems in those already overcrowded cities. So who knows what the ripple effects of these drone strikes will be, but they will not be pretty. And I think the U.S. government and the military have no conception, just like they did in Iraq, about how their limited view of taking out a dictator like Saddam Hussein or of trying to find some al-Qaeda members, but doing it in the indiscriminate way that they are doing it now, the kind of effects that it has on massive numbers of people and the potential for tremendous instability and the tremendous blowback that might come. How do people in that region view America? They hate America. They hate Americans. They would hate you and me if they met us because it would be very hard for them to distinguish between you and me and our government. And how can you blame them? That's all they know of the United States. All they've seen from us is the buzzing overhead of an ominous killing machine and the destruction of their communities.
We thought that the situation would go back to normal after one bad person, George W. Bush, left the presidency, but nothing changed. A person got elected, president who's worse than the first one. I blame American people who pay taxes, which the U.S. government uses for drones. Bush was bad, but Obama is worse. I don't know why educated Americans don't let us live our lives. On one hand, they build roads and spend millions of dollars on polio vaccinations, while on the other hand, they kill us with drones.
That's it for this edition of Making Contact. There's lots of content related to this week's show on our website. Along with videos of anti-drone protests, we've got full-length interviews with Code Pink's Medea Benjamin and Sister Megan Rice, who's been protesting drone warfare at a Nevada Air Force base. You've been listening to the first of our programs on drones. Part two will be on how drones are being used for domestic purposes. You can help support that show and all of our work at radioproject.org. Special thanks to Salima Hamarani for production help, to supporters Pat McSweeney and Bill Creighton, and welcome to affiliate station WRFN in Nashville, Tennessee. I'm Andrew Stelzer. Thanks for listening to Making Contact.